Hi everyone, I'm Gary Naw. Always a pleasure to be able to share health and healing information so we can all live a healthier and longer life. Today we're going to discuss olive oil and Alzheimer's, eating pecans, and why we should be concerned about the health of our thymus gland, fructose, not good, conventional apples, not good, but a healthy orange a day keeps macular degeneration away. All of this comes from the National Library of Medicine, all quality institutions, so you can trust the information. The first study comes from Temple University. A study published in the peer-reviewed journal Human Genomics identified the phytochemicals that are in olive oil, which are in olives, so therefore eat olives, as many as you want. Try to get the low-sodium olives, but if you should have more salt in the diet, even a healthy foods, but a little too much of the sodium, then make sure afterwards that you take either one of three things or all three. You can take some celery seed extract, a single capsule. That'll help. Also, you can take coenzyme Q10. That will help. And you can get them in a powder and you can get them in a little chewable, but they're made from beets. And those bring down blood pressure. So sometimes when we have a little more sodium what we should, just make sure you compensate. In any case, a team of investigators combined artificial intelligence with other research techniques to analyze how bioactive compounds in extra virgin olive oil interact with Alzheimer's disease pathways. And they hypothesized that a successful prevention or treatment strategy for Alzheimer's disease should focus on the modulation of multiple biochemical networks involved in its pathogenesis, meaning the cause of disease, including the amyloid, A-M-Y-L-O-I-D, beta production and aggregation. That's the bad, all right? And also this all leads to neuroinflammation. Smoking, drinking, alcohol in any amount, neuroinflammation. Being around cell phones, having up to your ear, neuroinflammation. Being close to a computer, neuroinflammation. Now, there are techniques you can use, like a cell phone. You can use one of those, the earplugs with a long tube, and that tube traps the pulses so it doesn't get into your body. You can do the same thing by putting some of the barriers in front of your computers and Wi-Fi and routers. It works. In any case, compounds that had the greatest probability of similarity of things being evaluated for the treatment of Alzheimer's disease in FDA trials were considered likeliest of being active against Alzheimer's. And number one, olive oil. Yes, olive oil. Why? Because it contains a lot of nutrients and also quercetin, genistein, lutein, L-U-T-E-O-L-I-N, stearic acid, apigenin, A-P-I-G-E-N-I-N, and squalene, and these at datazine, these were identified as most likely to interest the scientists because they interacted with genes and proteins associated with Alzheimer's disease. Well, number one was olive oil, which means number one is really olives, if you eat a wide variety of them. And so the bottom line is this. Olive oil contains phytochemicals found in the olives. And that interferes with the creation of Alzheimer's disease. And by the way, also quercetin, Q-U-E-R-C-E-T-I-N. That's eat an apple a day, get your quercetin. And genistein, have organic tofu or tempeh each day. Those two also showed a lot of promise in helping prevent Alzheimer's disease pathogenesis. So an apple a day, some olives, some olive oil. Yeah, nothing wrong with that. Now from Texas A&M College of Agriculture, eating pecans or pecans, they're both the same, P-E-C-A-N-S, where I come from is pecans. According to the study, it may help prevent obesity and inflammation. This observation is key for looking for how we can use foods as functionally unique, meaning they function in a good way inside of our body. And so if you want to be healthier, and if you want to have, you know, a healthier brain, have some pecans or have pecan butter. And by the way, nut butters are simply the nuts that are put into a giant blender and blended. You know, you could do the same thing yourself. You could add a little olive oil and you got your nut butter. And nut butters are easier to digest and they have a higher ability to assimilate the essential fatty acids that are good for your heart and your brain and your immune system. All right, and they help, especially if you have a high fat diet, and that's what they found. So there's a whole lot of ability to turn off inflammation when you have a handful of pecans, walnuts, almonds. Try to get them raw. Now, if you look, almost all the nut butters, in fact, I just went to a store here. I didn't even know the store existed. I've been here 27 years in my home, and I didn't know that, a little over 2 miles away, there's this big store, nice store, nice people. And for those of you who've thought, well, I have to go to Whole Foods, no, you don't. You know, if you've got a store called Sprouts, try them. I found, night and day in quality, pricing, freshness, variety, lots of organic stuff. Anyhow, I was looking at nut butters, and I couldn't find any that were raw. So you want the raw, organic nut butters. They're a little more expensive, sesame tahini butter, but when it's raw, it's alive. It has the enzymes in it, and that's what you want, all right? And that can help reduce low-grade inflammation that can lead to chronic inflammation that can lead to the development of a lot of disease, including cancer. So get some pecans into your diet each day. Now, from Massachusetts General Hospital comes a study about the importance of our thymus gland, T-H-Y-M-U-S. The thymus gland, by the way, it produces immune T cells before birth and during childhood. It's often regarded as a non-functional gland in adults, and is sometimes even removed during cardiac surgery for easier access to the heart and major blood vessels. However, new research led by investigators at Massachusetts General Hospital and published in the New England Journal of Medicine have uncovered evidence that the thymus is in fact critical for adult health generally and for preventing cancer and perhaps autoimmune disease. So, thymus is right here. And what one of the therapies that I saw yogas doing was just tapping it 20 times, right there on the sternum. It's right under it, all right? And it rejuvenates. And acupuncture there also. I ask my acupuncturist. By the way, once every month, I go to a chiropractor. Anything wrong? Nope. But I want to make sure that everything's in balance. It's $30. It's worth it. And also, once a week, I go to an acupuncturist. Anything wrong? No. But this medical doctor from China, who is extremely knowledgeable, very healthy, I guess he's around 70, lean, good muscle tone, takes care of himself. And he also was in one of Mao's detention camps for 6 years for doing nothing. That was a bad time in his life. But in any case, he says that people should understand that energy is what causes all of life. He is correct. Because the only thing that's missing when you're dead is your energy. So acupuncture and to a lesser degree acupressure, touching a place on the body, of the 362 meridians, is able to unblock the energy and allow it to start the healing process. It's terrific for pain. It's terrific for your heart rhythms. In fact, he said that he regularly helps people, himself included, who had AFib and did acupuncture, and it helps people grow hair, and the acupuncture helped normalize AFib. And that's important. We should know that. So why not do some of these therapies preventatively? So every time I get it done, he'll take my pulse. Mind you, he's reading multiple pulses. Your average doctor can only read one. And then he says, all right, good, your heart rhythm's at 48, 49 beats a minute. That's what it should be based upon being an ultramarathoner. And blood pressure, perfect. All right? But he says it's also important to understand the rhythm of the heart. Is it beating softly, which it should, or is it beating hard? And so when you get your pulse taken and a person doesn't realize, oh, my pulse is all over the place. When was the last time you had a check? I don't know. Didn't think it was important. It is important. Have your blood pressure checked, your blood sugar checked. Men, have your prostate gland checked. And make sure you're in good shape. If you're not, at least you can start and correct it. And there are natural, non-toxic ways of correcting all this. And he told me about the thymus gland, that it's a mistake to think that it's not functioning. You have to liberate the energy, and acupuncture does that. But tapping does it also. What Dr. Grayson does, Henry Grayson, one of the best psychoanalysts in America. So in any case, so your thymus gland should not be removed, and the thymus gland is absolutely required for health. If it isn't there, people risk dying and risk cancer, and that doubles your chance of having both of those. So understand the thymus gland is essential. Next study comes from the University of Colorado Medical Campus. It's about fructose. Fructose intake is a driver of obesity, just like hibernating animals. Yeah. Research at the university have officially identified a central conduit to obesity, fructose. And while fructose's contribution to obesity is well known, a study published today in Physiological Transactions of the Royal Society of Biological Sciences shows that it aggregates a large amount of work to make a full amount of how fructose drives obesity and disease, such as diabetes and fatty liver disease. And so you don't want to have fructose in the diet. Now, eating fruit, you're going to get some natural fructose, but that's not going to have the same effect. And also, conventional apples are drenched with toxic chemicals to keep them so-called fresh. This is from the Environmental Working Group. Non-organic apples are almost always at the top of Environmental Working Group's Dirty Dozen list due to their alarmingly high content of pesticides. On average, they have 4.4 detectable residues of pesticides, and in some cases, very high concentrations. However, at least one of these chemicals is entirely unnecessary, and the reason of its usage is shocking. Most conventionally grown apples are covered in an added chemical treatment after harvest, and this is a substance identified to prevent apple skins from developing black or brown patches, or what they called storage scald, and while they're in storage. Now, mind you, your apple that you think is fresh could be a year old because they're grown in season, like upstate New York, in August, September, and October. They don't grow the rest of the year, but they're stored and they're treated. Now, you can get fresh organic apples, but they can also be preserved in beeswax, which is non-toxic. But regular apples? No, that's not the way it works. So just be careful. Make sure you buy organic apples. All right? And an orange a day keeps macular degeneration away. That's a 15-year study from the Westmead Institute for Medical Research. A new study has shown that people who regularly eat oranges are less likely to develop macular degeneration than people who do not eat those oranges. And this was done at the Institute, studied 2,000 Australian adults over 50 and followed them for 15 years. There was a 60%, I repeat, 60% reduced risk of developing late macular degeneration. So, an orange a day, an apple a day, yeah, all that's good. And we got a lot more to share with you. And by the way, you can go to Well, let's say yesterday I did my classroom on the air was about 20 minutes long, and it was on allergies. Everything you need to know if you have allergies and how to overcome them. Go to Gary and All YouTube, and you can download that, or Odyssey, or Rumble. And my commentary yesterday that people seem to appreciate is posted on PRN.live, and it's posted on GaryNall.com. But it will also be on Rumble, and it'll be on Odyssey today. And our newsletter, we have thousands of people reading the newsletter, and it's packed with information. I mean, packed. And I'm doing a classroom on the air on breast cancer, endometriosis, hormonal rebalance, natural hormone rebalance therapy, replacement therapy. And it's free. It's a public service. All right? So check out the classroom on the air. Go over to Gary and All YouTube. There are thousands of videos over there I have. We're going to take a break and come right back because we've got a lot of interesting stuff to share with you. Please stay with us. Welcome back, everyone. I'm going to share a clip with you now with Professor Glenn Lowry and Professor Norman Finkelstein. Glenn Lowry, as many of you know, is a leading African-American intellectual, graduated from MIT, and he asked some probing questions based upon his own observations about how relevant was Barack Obama's presidency to helping the underprivileged, especially minorities who voted for him, for hope and change. And if you haven't seen Finkelstein, who I've had on my program many times, he is an opponent of Zionism. He is a scholar. He spent his entire adult life writing about dispelling the myths that occur in the Middle East and other places. I think you'll find this interesting. You can agree or disagree with him. That's fine. No problem. And then call in later and share your thoughts. Again, I have open forums. I welcome debate. As you saw, I've had several debates recently. People that I hold different points of view, but they're civil debates. They're, you know, I show them courtesy. I let them talk. I don't interrupt them. I don't talk over them. You know, let someone say what they have to say. And then if you have a different point of view, share your different point of view. That's what we should be doing in our society. We shouldn't be yelling at each other. We shouldn't be saying, you don't have a right to speak. I disagree with you, so I'm going to cancel you. We shouldn't be doing this. This is just uncivil. This is something that I'm ashamed is occurring, especially when we want the best of liberal and conservative values, the conservative family, the society, your community, your religious beliefs being honored. I may have a different belief on that, but I respect you for having those. And also the liberal perspectives of give everyone an opportunity. Do not show bias or prejudice. Do not show animus to thoughts you're not aware of. Do not be jealous of the intelligence or common sense or reason that other people proffer to us. Open yourself up. That's and be against war and conflict. Be against power being grabbed and used against the citizenry. And we don't have that today. We have absolute chaos. And that's why I believe the more we have discussions to understand our problems, the more likely we are to find constructive, nonviolent, conciliatory solutions that benefit all of us. I don't believe that one person, one group, one identity, one religion, one ethnicity should be above any other. We should all have an opportunity to live in peace. But we have to know our problems. Now to the clip.
Obama. I told you this story in private correspondence. I'll repeat it here. The campaign of 2008, Obama is selling the country on hope and change, and we are the ones we've been waiting for. As vapid as you could possibly imagine in retrospect, but it actually persuaded a majority of voters to cast ballots on his behalf in 2008. And but so he's on the rise, but not yet nominated. And a Black, brilliant undergraduate student of mine at Brown, who I'll not name, comes to me and he whispers, he says, "Is Obama a pimp?" And I say, "What? What?" He says, because he's mind f***ing all of us. And I said, that's something to think about. You said it, I didn't, but that's something to think about. I was reminded of this kid when I read your long chapter on Obama. So Obama is now Saint Obama. He and Michelle are billionaires, or as close to that as you could imagine. And here you are, Mr. Contrarian, out there saying what? What are you saying about Obama?
The first thing is to say what you just said as having been acknowledged by Obama. When you read his memoir, he says in the 2008 election, I pulled off, and I'm using his expression, a neat trick. that's the phrase he uses, a neat trick. And the neat trick was, I stood for absolutely nothing. And I managed to get myself elected, obviously by virtue of being a black man. I mean, first of all, it takes a certain amount of lack of self-aware brazenness to boast about the fact that you got elected standing for nothing. It's as if John F. Kennedy were to write his memoir, I got elected because of my thick shock of hair. Which he, by the way, it's reported he combed 40 times a day, but we'll leave that aside, to boast about that. And then at another point, he calls himself, Obama calls himself the ultimate Rorschach test. Everybody saw what they wanted to see in me. I stood for nothing. There was an element of, as I say, lack of self-aware cynicism. That was really quite striking.
Let me beg to differ just a minute. He stood for, I am the first black president. That's not nothing.
That's correct. What he did was, he turned the presidential election into a morality tale, a referendum, in which each of the electors was called upon to make a moral test. If you are a good person, you vote for Obama. If you are a bad person, you don't vote for Obama. So instead of a presidential election being a referendum on the candidates, is he a good candidate or is he a bad candidate? It became a referendum on the electorate. Are you a good people or are you a bad people?
Let me observe that would only be possible with the ratification of Obama's move, I am the emblem of a virtuous good person's vote. The ratification of that by black people who might have said, you're a carpetbagger, you don't know anything about our experience, really. This is all symbolism. You and Martin Luther King don't deserve to be in the same frame. What do you mean taking my noble history of centuries of oppression in this country and appropriating it to your own personal ambition with smoke and mirrors? But we didn't say that.
I do regard it as a regrettable fact that because of a kind of racial, if I can use the term, defensiveness, that even to this day, it's still impossible for a non-white person to say anything critical of Obama without then the thought passing through the black person that he or she must be a racist. As I say, that defensiveness endures to this day, and I can understand it. The great Roman philosopher Terence, he famously said in the Latin, I'll give it in the English version, nothing human is alien to me, which is to say, don't put me on a pedestal. All of the flaws that all of us carry with us, I carry with me. So I will acknowledge that a lot of times when a non-Jewish person gets too carried away in his or her loathing of Israel, I begin to wonder, is something else going on there? Are they really indignant about, yes, Israel's policies are murderous, bestial, so forth, but is that their only animating sentiment, the injustice? And so I can understand the African-American defensiveness when it comes to criticizing publicly Barack Obama. I get it. And I will say, I recognized I was taking a chance with that chapter. I recognized that. And I said to myself, you know, Norm, a large part of your career was saying a lot of things that Jews did not want to hear. And I commanded a certain amount of immunity because I myself was Jewish and I had, as it were, the Holocaust credentials. And I went after all the icons of the Jewish community and the Holocaust memory, like Elie Wiesel and others in my, for example, the Holocaust industry. And so I said to myself, you know, Norm, you earned the right to write what you take to be the truth about this whole mystique that shrouds Obama. And the chapter is evenly balanced between Obama himself as, to quote David Garrow, an empty vessel, and all the woke people, the Axelrods, the David Axelrods, the David Plouffes, the Lawrence Tribes, the Martha Minows, all of those white woke liberals, the Ben Rhodes, all of those white woke liberals who created Obama in the most cynical, disingenuous way, with people like Lawrence Tribe saying, oh, he's the most brilliant student I've had in 40 years. He knows particle physics. He knows, I'm not joking, he knows relativity. He knows quantum physics. Now, you, Glenn Lowry, went to MIT. Lawrence Tribe went to Harvard at age 16 and got his degree in mathematics, summa cum laude, okay?
I hear you, man.
And he knows math. You know math.
Right.
Obama never took a math course.
And you couldn't find his transcript if you went looking for it.
All right. But let's leave aside the transcript. We know the courses he took.
Yeah.
He never took a math course. The closest he took to a science course was a course at Columbia called Physics for Poets. You get me?
You understand
that kind of course. A flaky course where you can pass your science requirement. Physics for Poets. Now, is it credible?
No,
is
it's not.
It plausible? I put that question to Breonna Joy Gray, who's a very smart young woman.
She is.
And she studied as an undergraduate at Harvard. She double majored in the history of art and the history of science. And she said, I took a good half of my courses in the hard sciences. And I asked Breonna, do you think Obama knows relativity? Now, you know what it means, Glenn, to know relativity? I'll tell you what it means. I was once in a car ride with Professor Chomsky, and we were making small talk, not really talk. I just ask questions, he gives answers. You know, it was like the kid show, Ask Mr. Wizard. I was always asking. So one day I'm making, you know, I said, you know, Professor, I ask him, what do you think about Einstein's theory of relativity? Is it all that it's said to be, or is there a certain element of, I can use the crude expression, hype to it? Professor Chomsky turned to me and he said, Norman, first of all, only a handful of people in the world understand the theory of relativity. Only a handful of people understand it. But now to read Lawrence Tribe and to read David Remnick in his hagiographic biography of Obama, Obama understood relativity. You know, that was the idiotic white liberal wokeness to make these utterly preposterous claims. And as I said, Breonna Joy Gray, to her credit, because she's serious, she said, of course he didn't understand relativity. You know, it's just a completely incredible, preposterous, ridiculous claim. But the encomia, this incessant, everyone saying, he's brilliant, he's brilliant, he's brilliant, he's brilliant. Fine. So I sit down, where is the evidence? He went to law school. He was the editor of Harvard Law Review. He wrote 1 6-page comment on abortion. 1 6-page comment. That is his complete, total, exhaustive scholarly production. He was up, as you know, they were wooing him at University of Chicago to be at the, to stay at the law school, to give him a tenured position. They were offering him a tenured position when his total scholarly output was 1 6-page comment in Harvard Law Review. That's it. Now, as you know, Glenn, you're an academic. Maybe the standard is wrong, but you recognize as an academic that the standard typically used to judge somebody's academic brilliance is scholarly production.
Let me just interject. I mean, I don't disagree with anything you're saying here, Norman, but I just want to say this. So there's such a thing as a professor of practice at a professional school like a law school, a school of public policy. You could have somebody get a tenured appointment based upon the value in your pedagogic mission of teaching your students of having real world experience and, you know, mastery over some domain of public policy or public action. And I'm not saying Obama met that desiderata. I'm saying in principle, you don't have to have books and everything to get tenure in an academic
program. If you're in the presidential administration, you can get a job based on your experiences.
That's what I'm saying.
Yes. But what was Obama's experience? He was a community organizer for 2.5 years. That's it.
Yeah, and elected to the state legislature.
Well, the state legislature, you know, the Chicago state, the Illinois
no,
state.
No, I know about that election. I know how he disqualified the incumbent because the signatures on the ballot qualification referenda were not all kosher, and he was able to walk into that seat basically without opposition.
And if you read his descriptions of that period in his life, he seems to have spent a lot of time playing cards, which is understandable in the Illinois State Legislative House. And he put forth some bills, but people who were activists said he never followed through on the bills. He never did anything with those bills. There was no active engaged involvement in politics, because Obama's a completely apolitical creature. He has no interest in politics whatsoever.
Your thoughts. You could agree or disagree, but here you have two different people. You have a person coming from both coming from a strong academic background, both professors, one African American, and he's calling out what he considers his truth to the illusion of truth around Obama. I've made my sentiments very clear. I looked at Obama's background, and most importantly, I look at the progenitor of his rising. He was selected. He was selected by the Pritzker family. He was guided by David Axelrod. He was helped by Rahm Emanuel. And just connect the pieces. Rahm Emanuel, look at Chicago before and after, a mess. Look at his brother, the medical doctor who guided and was the cause of most of Obamacare, which excluded millions of Americans, did not honor any of the alternative complementary, and was written almost exclusively with Freedom of Information Act, showing dozens of visits by the insurance industry. the insurance industry makes over $1 trillion a year because of their association. And guess who gives to the committees? Look at David Axelrod, who also helped the Clintons. Look at his association with the nuclear power industry. And look who promotes and gives subsidies to the nuclear power industry when we should be closing it down. And then at the end of it, look at how many people were put in cages. Who built the original cages the children were separated from their parents and put into? It was Obama. And look what he did for the criminal justice system. He could have caused the pardoning of every single person in prison who was there for drug usage, but didn't. He could have honored the whistleblowers. Instead, he put them in jail. He did more against whistleblowers than all other previous presidents combined. He didn't protect or honor a single whistleblower. Why? Because they were exposing crimes against humanity and by the government, and malfeasance by corporate interest. And so if you told the truth, like Julian Assange, or Chelsea Manning, or Edward Snowden, or Drake, or Benny, and Kaukau, and all the others, over 60, where did the liberal establishment stand on benefiting from knowing the truth from them, and then seeing not one of the people in the establishment come to their defense? That tells you a lot about someone. It should, and if it doesn't, that's on you. Give us your thoughts, 888-874-4888. While you're thinking about calling in and what you'd like to say, Bill Gates. Bill Gates, and by the way, I want to say I have not seen any evidence to date that COVID vaccines were created with the idea of reducing the population. I think that is a completely unfounded theory. However, that's separate from using experimental vaccines, as the Gates Foundation did in India and in Africa, and a sterilizing, luteinizing hormone that would sterilize all the young women in Kenya who got it. Never told anyone that we put a hormone in here in the vaccine, ostensibly to get rid of a major disease, but it wasn't getting rid of the disease. It was sterilizing every single person that got the vaccine. And later it was, oh, oops, sorry about that. And but he was never called out on that. And all the deaths and all the people that got the wild poliovirus in India, never called out on that. He has no background in science. He has no background in anything except making money and manipulating people. So why is he showing up everywhere, including at the G20 summit? Since when does an unelected person show up with the world's top 20 world leaders elected, and he and Klaus Schwab show up together? Since when is that a good thing? Here's clips, and I think you should pay attention to these clips.
Bill Gates has become so arrogant in recent times that he is happy for the cameras to catch him saying the quiet parts out loud.
You know, is spending $1 million on that last 3 months of life for that patient, would it be better not to lay off those 10 teachers and to make that trade-off in medical costs? But that's called the death panel, and you're not supposed to have that discussion. So you, of course,
well,
that's
an interesting thing you just said, which is just the last 3 months in life for one person or something, because we haven't had a discussion of how to allocate that money, it means we lay off three teachers to do so. I mean, in other words, we
That's
haven't
right.
had
Society's
this type of allocation.
Making, we're discussion. Making that trade-off because of huge medical costs that are not examined to see which ones actually have no benefit whatsoever.
Well, wait,
and because of pension generosity, we will be laying off over 100,000 teachers, which, you know, I'm very much against that. And the whole AFT will agree with me on that.
Terrifying stuff, I'm sure you'll agree. Gates doesn't explain why we can't pay teachers and allow people to live out their lives in peace. Why is it either or? After all, in the past, we didn't have any problem paying teachers their salaries and allowing our elderly to enjoy their grandchildren during their golden years. This is the brutal, murderous world Bill Gates and his associates at the World Economic Forum are determined to roll out as part of their Great Reset. We can't allow their evil logic to become the new normal. If you are wondering what else they have up their sleeve, it's worth paying attention to what was happening at the G20 in Bali, Indonesia this week. The G20 is a summit featuring leaders of the most important economies in the world, and it's a mix of countries considered to be advanced or developing. Beyond the rooms where world political leaders sit around and thrash out various issues, there are dozens of side events where so-called dignitaries meet. As James Melville asked on Twitter, why were Bill Gates and Klaus Schwab in attendance at the G20? No one voted for them. The mainstream media is declaring anyone who asks this question to be a conspiracy theorist, but it's a totally legitimate question to ask. The world's richest man and the new emperor of Twitter, Elon Musk, was also in attendance there, just before he completely backtracked on his promises to turn Twitter into a free speech platform. Musk once declared himself a free speech absolutist. Now he is point blank refusing to reinstate and warning that freedom of speech does not mean freedom of reach. Musk appeared at the G20 alongside the more established figures of the globalist elite, including Bill Gates and Klaus Schwab, who has already used the forum to instruct world leaders to begin restructuring the global economy in line with the WEF's techno-communist vision. For his part, Gates is using the forum to instruct world leaders that death panels will be necessary in the near future in order to end the lives of sick and unwell people due to very, very high medical costs. Of course, Gates' death panels have everything to do with the globalist elite's obsession with depopulation. Bill Gates' plans for death panels mirrors the language used by the World Economic Forum regarding euthanasia, and the Canadian government's devilish new solution to solve inflation, homelessness, skyrocketing crime, and food shortages: euthanasia for the poor. The Trudeau regime say they are now offering to pay to euthanize people who are too poor to continue living with dignity.
This is violence. This is medicalized violence. Why isn't this being covered? Why aren't we talking about it? Especially when it's poor people, especially when it's working class people who are structurally pushed into that. I think that's a question worth asking.
Well, sure. And there's this very difficult problem, which is what do you do when an economy based on finance starts to go south and average people, you know, can't kind of sustain themselves? Do you do guaranteed basic income or whatever? This seems like an obvious choice for ghouls, neoliberal ghouls, like we'll just get, you know, force poor people to kill themselves.
And how many times have we heard from Canada about their healthcare system, their social care system, talking down to us about so many things? And now it's come home to roost. Canada's policies are seen for what they are. And Canada has their own problems. We need to learn from this. We need to say, look, what's happening to our poor people, to our disabled people? The dementia population, Tucker, which we talked about the early part of the pandemic, is set to double in the next 20 years. It's going to triple in the next 30 years. What are we going to do? Are we going to put the resources in to care for them? If we don't, I really only see two options: so-called robot care or straight up no chaser euthanasia.
Yeah. So why don't politicians just say out loud now? I mean, so many things we're seeing now, we couldn't have imagined 10 years ago or 5 years ago even, and now they're commonplace.
That's right.
Killing yourself is not liberation. It's really sad. You shouldn't be forced to do it. Like, why does nobody say that?
Well, your show is an example of giving people a voice who have no voice. The people who are most dramatically impacted by this, the working class and the poor, don't have a voice. And so we need to decide. And it's so interesting to see the political realignment underway. Which party is going to be the voice of the working class, the working, and of the poor, to be on the side of people who say, I don't want to die. I don't want to die, but I don't see any option given what's been offered me. That's just diabolical.
It is. Diabolical is the word for it. And you've been writing about this for so long. And thank you for doing that. Professor, great to see you.
Canada's descent into barbarism should come as no surprise. The Canadian government has been completely penetrated by the WEF. Prime Minister Justin Trudeau and his deputy Chrystia Freeland are both WEF young global leaders who have completely sold their soul to Klaus Schwab and his vision for the future. And make no mistake, that vision involves depopulating the world. The technocrats in charge at the WEF are so excited by their plan to murder the majority of the world's population that they simply can't stop talking about it.
So in the session we just attended here at the Economic Forum, I think there was a sense of relief, actually, in your frankness. You brought up some issues that others are reluctant
to bring
up.
That's my trouble.
Always.
All the religious groups are against me because I'm talking about population. They want more souls. I want less on the planet.
At what point do we stop and say, enough? How many times does the World Economic Forum have to declare their sinister intentions before the world stops and listens? Klaus Schwab's right-hand man, Yuval Noah Harari, has a history of saying the quiet part out loud. And last month, he admitted what many people have long suspected. According to Harari, who was promoting his new book, the big political question for the 21st century for those in power is, what do we need so many humans for? And it's not even the first time Yuval Noah Harari has let slip regarding their plans for humanity. He recently declared that the WEF considers the vast majority of the human population to be useless and obsolete. According to Harari, so-called common people are right to be fearful of a future in which they will be made redundant.
COVID is critical because this is what convinces people to accept, to legitimize total biometric surveillance. If we want to stop this epidemic, we need not just to monitor people, we need to monitor what's happening under their skin.
What we have seen so far, it's corporations and governments collecting data about where we go, who we meet, what movies we watch. The next phase is the surveillance going under our skin. We're now seeing mass surveillance systems established even in democratic countries, which previously rejected them. And we also see a change in the nature of surveillance. Previously, surveillance was mainly above the skin. Now it's going under the skin. Governments want to know not just where we go or who we meet. Above all, they want to know what is happening under our skin. What's our body temperature? What's our blood pressure? What is our medical condition? Now humans are developing even bigger powers than ever before. We are really acquiring divine powers of creation and destruction. We are really upgrading humans into gods. We are acquiring, for instance, the power to re-engineer life. I know that in recent years, we saw populist politicians undermining deliberately the trust that people have in important institutions like universities, like respectable media outlets. These populist politicians told people that, say, scientists are this small elite, disconnected from the real people.
I mean, all this story about Jesus rising from the dead and being the son of God, this is fake news.
Humans are now hackable animals. You know, the whole idea that humans have, you know, this, they have this soul or spirit and they have free will and nobody knows what's happening inside me. So whatever I choose, whether in the election or whether in the supermarket, this is my free will, that's over.
Harari's comments are deeply disturbing because when they are placed in context with comments by other WEF advisors like Bill Gates and his desire for death panels, it becomes clear that they have mass murder on their mind. How much more evidence is required before conspiracy theory becomes a conspiracy fact?
Harari, in my opinion, is one of the most irresponsible pseudo-intellects in the world. I'm going to take 10 minutes tomorrow of a clip that he made. He was being interviewed in a long hour and a half interview. I'm just taking the first 10 minutes. That was not. And by the way, one of his biggest advocates is Obama, who was also one of Klaus Schwab's young world leaders, like Trudeau. In any case, I'm going to show you how many mistakes, actual errors he made in just the first 10 minutes. And then I'm going to break the rest of it down. I'm going to completely deconstruct that this man, I don't believe in censorship, even as the guy said, you know, I don't like Alex Jones. I don't like what he says. I wouldn't watch his show. But you shouldn't be selective in about who you censor. Now they want to censor everyone, and that's a slippery slope. Then you only want to hear what people like you and your beliefs have in common. So, yeah, I don't like Alex Jones at all. And my own personal view is, and I won't appear on this program, I'll debate him, absolutely. But if you're going to censor everyone, or not say we're not censoring people, then allow him to say whatever he says, as irresponsible as it is, and then challenge him on it. You know. But now only those, for example, who signed the Great Declaration the paper, 75,000 scientists, Nobel Prize winners, they're all being censored. Every professor that challenges any woke principle is being censored. Critical race theory, attack it, you're censored. So we have become a nation obsessed with the idea that we don't want to hear what someone has to say, so censor them and then destroy them. Your thoughts, 888-874-4888. And by the way, tomorrow I'm going to do a special report on how the average woman going into the average hospital, how much they have to spend just to have a baby in the United States. It is unbelievable. Who gets all that money and why? And why is there no protest against it? That's tomorrow. One quick thing before your calls come in, and I hope they do come in, I'd like to hear from you. Yesterday we had the Oracle of Harlem call in. Jeremiah, he always has something prescient to say. But I got something brand new to announce today, and I hope that you find this of interest. And that is that I'm going to be introducing my newest documentary in 2 weeks, Sunday, at 1 o'clock. And this is a really upbeat documentary. This is not a hard-hitting documentary like my last one, which is just now being distributed, not even fully distributed yet, Manufacturer Madness. No, this is called Aging is Natural. Growing Old is an Option. It'll be a showing of the film, a lecture, and then Q&A. And for a lot of people who were not able to be in my anti-aging groups because they're limited and they're very disciplined, and my number six one is ongoing now, I'm hopeful to do another one. But you can go to GaryNall.com and sign up for it, and or you can call our number and sign up for it. Our number is 877-627-5065, 877-627-5065, or call Neil in the Vitamin Closet, noon to 8 p.m., Monday through Saturday, 646-926-5430, 646-926-5430. What's going to be happening here that would be different? First of all, in the film, you're going to see people who have their medical records, have blood chemistries, have methylated DNA blood chemistries that showed they add years onto their life. No one's ever done that before. No scientific study's ever done that. And then how they did it. So I'm going to show you everything, including the people telling their own stories that we've not done before, about how they reversed disease, overcame lifelong depressions, anxiety disorders, autoimmune conditions, and now are not only totally healthy, vitally healthy, but also how they actually, scientifically proven, added years onto their life. Now, there's all kinds of games and gimmicks and lotions and potions and claims. I haven't seen anything that legitimizes that. This is legitimate. So if you want to see how to do this, how to live a longer and healthier life, you now have an opportunity to do that. So it's a webinar. It'll probably last, I'm guessing, around 3, maybe 4 hours. Anywhere in the world, you can join us. It's 2 Sundays from now, August 13th, 1 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, live webinar. Aging is natural, but growing old is an option. You can have two people, both 60 years of age, both 50, 40 years of age, and one is actually biologically 80 years, and the other one could be 30 years. And we know now how to do that. I spent my entire adult life, 38 years, as a senior research fellow, director of the anti-aging division, anti-aging medicine at the Institute of Applied Biology. I've done more clinical studies than any other person I'm aware of in the United States, any scientist, with actual people, with hundreds of thousands of people, with my health support groups, mastering life groups, clinical studies, and the last 6 anti-aging studies. So it's now your chance to feel younger, be younger, look younger, and have muscle, strength, endurance, human growth hormone. And for those of you who don't believe it's possible, then it's not. For those of you who believe it is, it is. You know, it's like saying, well, we saw 10,000 UFOs and they were all false, but one wasn't. Okay. Do you focus upon the 10,000 that were false, or do you focus upon the fact that you discovered UFOs and extraterrestrial life? Depends upon your attitude, depends upon your orientation, how you view life, whether you're an optimist or pessimist, whether you see everything as half full, half empty, whether you see an abundance of shortness of everything, or you see an abundance of everything to the positive. You can't be both. So this is for people who would like to change their life for the better in ways that are not difficult and not, I don't keep it in scientific language, I break it into lay language. But this is a revolutionary documentary. I've already gotten some really good feedback from some of the leading anti-aging scientists in the world on this. So I'm very pleased about this. And so this is a private screening. I'll do a lecture. I'll answer questions. And it's entitled, Aging is Natural, Growing Old is an Option. You've never experienced this information or seen real people. These are not stem cells in a laboratory. You know, there's a big, huge conference, largest in the world, held in Orlando recently, and I was asked to come and be a keynote speaker. And I said, not quite ready for that. I will in the fall. I'll come to your winter one because I want to bring some people with me, and I want to bring their methylated DNA test showing for the first time we've extended lifespan, something these people have spent billions of dollars on in a test tube with stem cells and haven't yet done. So he said, fine. But these people would never do this kind of study. It's way too rigorous. It's way too difficult. There's so many moving pieces. But we did it. And we proved it. It's not speculation. It's real science. So I hope that you choose to set time aside and join me at that time. 2 weeks from Sunday, August 13th. That's the second Sunday from now, 1 p.m. The film itself is about 2 hours and 7 minutes, and then I'll do a lecture after that, and a short lecture, and then I'll answer all your questions. So for all over the world where you couldn't come to the study, now you have a chance to benefit from everything that was shared there. And by the way, I'm being optimistic that the people both at doing it on campus and doing it at home, the control group, will have tremendous results coming. Well, for one group, it'll be this month when they get their final blood work up. It'll be 90 days. For the other group, it'll be probably a month and a half later, and then we'll have the results. And if they're what I hope they are, then I'm going to do one more study next spring where it's going to be 90 days on campus and followed by 9 months. It'll be a one-year study. And my hope is I can only do it if we get one of the foundations out there to pay for it, because it's a lot of money. I've spent so much money out of my own pocket, and I couldn't afford to do a 90-day study on campus, paying for the hotel bills and the food and everything else, and the staff. But if this one is good and we get the good results, and I don't see the results, I'm the last person that gets to see them. They have to go through the universities, and they have to go through the foundations, they have to go through their scientists, and then I am told what the results are. So that's what's coming at us. But you're going to get the prelude to it, and that's this webinar with the new brand new film. And there'll only be one showing. And that's it. Okay, we're out of time, and I don't see any calls coming in. So I'll simply say I want to thank you all for listening today. And remember, we're a form that does not limit free speech, or even those who have strongly different points of view. To the contrary, let them talk, and then we find whether we agree or disagree in part or whole, and offer legitimate challenges to that. That's how we grow, by experiencing other people and their perceptions, their realities, and then comparing them to our own. Have a nice day, everyone.